Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Introducing the new Showdown series and menu inspired by the iconic 1993 and 1997 Showdown commercials featuring hockey's biggest superstars, Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid. The menu features some of your favorite menu items with a new hockey twist, like number 34, the Smoky Quarter Poppy, number 97, the Big Mac David, the Power Play Poutine, the Hat Trick, Selly Sunday, and the Spicy Junior Chirpy. Now at McDonald's.
Chirpy?
That's what it's called. Is that what you had? The Spicy Junior Chirpy, well, the chicken?
I had that and the hat trick.
And the hat trick.
Anyway.
Poutine is sitting in front of me. The Power Play Poutine is sitting in front of me.
Very nice.
Maybe. We'll see. I had a bunch of pizza right before the show. Yeah, I can't layer on a whole bunch of McDonald's.
You're not at a five-year-old's birthday party. I will say that the hat trick was excellent. Oh, I want to ride for the hat trick.
Yeah, it looked good.
I can't ride for something called a chirpy.
Three patties in there?
Yep.
That's what makes it a hat trick.
Had some pickles in the middle of the patties.
Ooh,
it was great.
Yum.
Yeah.
All right, so we teased it a little bit in the last segment, especially in the broadsheet, but I do find it interesting also. So, you know, there was this, it felt like an imminent trade over the weekend. Obviously, it falls apart, but now it's just kind of out there. Like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of mystery. You know, Patrick Alvin didn't deny anything about the JT Miller speculation or rumors or reports. JT Miller hasn't denied anything about it. You know, the players have kind of acknowledged, not specifically about JT Miller, but just, you know, the noise, it's getting to them a little bit here. And it does kind of start to make me wonder, how much urgency should the Canucks feel to get this done? Or on the flip side, should they be willing to wait? And I know that was Paul Bissonnette's advice, right? Hey, wait, maybe at the draft there's more teams willing to do it. I noticed your Athletic colleague Mike Russo in a mailbag today about the Minnesota Wild. He was asked, hey, would the Wild be interested in JT Miller? And he kind of said, probably not in season, but once their salary cap issues clear off going into next year, yeah, he thinks they would absolutely be interested. So there is that other side of the argument that maybe it's a little bit easier to get a good deal, to get a deal you like if you're waiting. But now that it's so public and that so like it was such detailed reporting about how things went down over the weekend and it seems so close, it just feels like an awful lot to sit through and sit in and wait and subject everyone to, the player, the rest of the players to, for the rest of this season and going into the offseason. Like, it feels like there needs to be a resolution sooner rather than later.
There does not. This is the Vancouver Canucks.
That's a good point.
We can sit on stuff forever. In fact, no organization loves to dither on things we all know are going to happen more than the Vancouver Canucks. Let's go through a brief history.
Okay. We want to work in reverse chronological order, or because Boudreaux comes to mind first for me.
Boudreaux comes to mind for sure. Like, by late November, we kind of knew Boudreaux was getting fired, and by mid December, we knew that Boudreaux was getting replaced by Rick Tocchet.
Yeah,
and it wasn't until late January
that it happened.
That it occurred. So that's for sure front of mind right off the hop.
And I just want to note on that as well. We've never really got a satisfactory answer about what was up with that. You know what I mean?
You're like, right. We didn't.
There was the whole thing. It's like, well, his claws at Turner. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
That doesn't make any sense. It's like, just buy it. Do it. Do the thing. I don't know. We never got an answer on that. No. Anyways.
Roberto Luongo is obviously the biggest example. It took like 2.5 years of speculation.
Yeah.
And right when that speculation had died down and the player came back from the Sochi Olympics prepared to like buy a house, settle in Vancouver, put this all to bed.
Mm-hmm.
The Heritage Classic happens and the club ends up trading him a week later. Ryan Kesler, which might actually be the most, mm-hmm, the closest analogy, not just because they're both like irascible, what word am I looking for? Anyway.
Irascible.
Irascible, yeah.
That's a word.
Irascible American-born centerman. But Remember the Kessler rumors in Sochi that like came out of a big international tournament? He says he's getting traded. You know, like now we're like a week out from the, and then he comes back, the trade deadline happens, it's expected that he's dealt. Things got complicated internally. I think that was an actual Canucks side veto because the general manager was effectively dead man walking.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting traded that summer. That was, you know, for me anyway, that was the closest example. But it's like we knew Kessler was getting dealt. Kessler denied requesting a trade. He sort of got put in a tough spot because the club wouldn't act quickly enough. The management ownership politics ended up sort of kiboshing a deal at the deadline. He ends up getting dealt by new management at the draft. That one played out over like 8 months. A long time. That took a long time. The other one that stands out to me, though, is the Bure holdout.
Yes.
The Bure holdout stands out to me. So, you know, I think we've seen a lot of these. And I want to coin a phrase to explain what the experience is like covering it and being...
Can I just throw one more in before we do it? And it's not as pronounced, but the final Travis Green, Jim Benning season.
Yeah.
There was a long waiting period there. Because remember, they were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, are they talking to Claude Julien? Is that going to happen?
And then Columbus. And then Boston,
it was like, there was kind of at least like a month of this, we're in a transitional period, we just don't know it yet thing.
I'd say it was more like 2.5 weeks.
Sure.
But it was 2.5 weeks for sure, where you knew that they had still had a GM in command who was not actually at the wheel.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair.
Anyways, you're going to coin a phrase here.
I want to coin
show.
A phrase here to explain what we're doing. We are waiting for Luan Godeau. That's what we're doing. We're waiting for Luan Godeau.
I saw where it was going as soon as you started the L of Luongo. I was like, oh, he's going to do it.
Of course, in reference to a famous Samuel Beckett play in which a group of people wait for their friend Godeau, who never arrives.
You don't need to explain it to our audience. Come on. We all get what you're talking about.
Our audience knows
big
about
Samuel Beckett heads? Are you kidding me?
Knows about the eternal patience of Didi and Gogo? Excellent. So, look, I think there's a lot that goes into why so much of this has happened. And as the waiting game continues, right, there's things like hope builds up that like, hey, maybe they can work it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or fear. Hey, maybe they're going to go on a win streak and change their minds.
Yep.
Right?
Well, and that could be hope or fear, depending on what your perspective is, right?
Well, and Bissonnette advising ownership, who we've seen, you know, put their fingers on the scale on occasion, over the course of their tenure as owners of the Canucks,
yep,
and counseling them to wait, especially in the wake of a scuttled trade. I mean, there's for some Canucks fans who've been really plugged in for like a decade plus, that's like hair-raising stuff, right? That's like the scariest thing you could hear. But I think the thing to note, and I was talking to Woodley about this today, in the context of Luongo, is like, the thing with Luongo's Vancouver tenure, especially toward the end there, is that there was always going to be another Heritage Classic. Whether it was Torts, right? Whether it was, you know, Alain Vigneault benching him for game, whatever, 5 of the Kings series. Like,
mm-hmm.
There was always going to be another Heritage Classic. The dynamic for Luongo in Vancouver was over, regardless of what people wanted to do or how they wanted to approach it.
Well, that, I was going to say, you compared and said maybe it's most similar to the Ryan Kessler situation where we are with JT Miller now, but I think it's maybe the Luongo one is the interesting one.
Well, because I just think even, like...
Because one is what, years of, oh, they're going to do it this time, they're really going to do, remember the, we talked to Dave Nonis about this before he went to work for Calgary, the one where he got pulled off practice on trade deadline day, and everyone thought, oh, this is it, it's happening, it's really, really happening, and... Of course, it did not happen that time, you know, and there were other instances. There was so much talk, so much conversation about him getting moved for so long. And then it would bounce back. And as you said, it would be like, oh, no, it's settled now. They're, you know, the forget about trading Luongo. It's they traded Corey Schneider. So now Luongo's their guy. Right. And it was always flip flopping. And it's a similar thing with JT Miller. You know, I went through it a little bit yesterday on the show, but the history of not just generalized, would they consider trading JT Miller, but specific, like, talks are really heating up with the New York Rangers, but they don't want to get out Braden Schneider, you know. Oh, they talked to the Penguins on the trade deadline about it.
JT Miller isn't with the team in Dallas right ahead of the deadline. What's going on?
Yeah. Like, and then it's Buddy comes back and he's playing incredibly well under Rick Tocchet. It's like, oh, forget about it now.
And then he signed for 8 years.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, I guess, look, that last one, the one where the Pittsburgh one, he was signed already.
Yes.
But I mean, if the 8 year extension isn't going to stop this every time the Canucks hit the skids, JT Miller is getting traded to the Rangers or the Penguins talk. You know, like if we're still here, there's always going to be a Heritage Classic for this player.
That's the real similarity, is that, as you said, the dynamic seems to be locked in at this point.
Right.
And
there's always going to be another Nashville benching. There's always going to be another Kevin Fiala dances him at the point, and then he makes a poor puck management decision and gets benched. Like, there's always going to be another shoe to drop here. And that's why I think these moments where we find ourselves in that waiting room waiting for Luan Godeau, right? Uh-huh. We need to keep in mind that there are fundamentals, right? There are fundamentals. This team could absolutely like win tonight and beat the McDavid-less Oilers and then be on a 3-game win streak and things start to look different in the standings and on and on. But there's always going to be another Nashville game. There's always going to be another. I think that's clear. If signing and committing 8 years and then having 100 plus point season and carrying the team in the playoffs in one of the most successful seasons in franchise mm-hmm. history hasn't altered this dynamic, nothing's going to.
And again, it's that, and it's 6 years. It's 6 years of this dynamic, and it hasn't changed that much. Like, the characters surrounding the dynamic have changed a lot. Coaches and general managers and supporting cast and all of that, that's changed throughout the 6 years. But the yo-yo dynamic and the highs and lows dynamic has not really changed. And you can be sitting listening to this, and maybe you agree with what we're saying about that dynamic. Maybe you have a different thought about how they should solve it, right? Maybe it should be, well, you should trade Elias Pettersson instead, or you should get a new coach or whatever. That's fair. Everyone can disagree on that. But I think it's pretty hard to argue that there's a certain dynamic we should expect to repeat and we should expect to keep seeing with this team. And, you know, we were talking about a little bit on the show yesterday in response to a listener question. Why are we at this position? Why are they going to break up this core, trade away a top player? Why does it look like they're going to anyways after their most successful season together? And I think one of the reasons probably is a recognition that until you make a move like that, you're kind of stuck in this cycle. You're stuck in this cycle where, as you said, there's always another shoe to drop. There's always something else that's going to happen. And the only way to get out of that cycle is to make a major change, like potentially trading JT Miller. And that kind of brings me back to the waiting versus urgency question here. And as much as you really want to get the best return you possibly can, it also just seems very damaging to the rest of your organization to kind of live in this moment for an extended period, to go through this awkward of a situation. And look, so far,
which Tocchet acknowledged today, by the way, noting that the noise has crept into the locker room, as he put it.
Of course it has. How could it not?
How could
in this situation where one of your top players was almost sitting out on Saturday against Edmonton, and then they played like that. That's not theoretical. That's not just, oh, just stay off social media and you won't see it. That's like real, impacting your day-to-day experience stuff. So whether or not you think, oh, hey, we're going to get a run, we're going to go on a run because there'll be a sense of clarity and relief after we make the trade, whatever you think is going to happen after,
or whether they go on a run now,
whatever you think is going to happen, it's like, it's bad. It just ripped the Band-Aid off at a certain point. Like, I thought that about Boudreaux. I thought that about, you go back through all the situations when I was a fan in the Luongo situation. It's like, just rip the Band-Aid off and move forward. Choose the action, commit to it, go get it done, do it, and then figure out where you're going next and move on. But this just Twilight Zone purgatory thing is exhausting.
I also just think when we have to, like, the one risk that I do think the club takes here, right, is I think you do have to be clear-eyed about the situation you're dealing with, right? Like, this is a team that really struggles to generate offensively.
Mm-hmm.
This is a player who's been banged up all season, right? This is a player who has not consistently been near his best, right? We've seen games like the Edmonton game and the Montreal game, but man, have we seen games like the LA Kings game and the Winnipeg Jets game, right?
Yep.
That makes this a little bit untenable in that the reason to hold, okay, is that you think you have a team that can make a run. I don't know. I'm not seeing that. Or You think there's a reason why he can perform better down the stretch and up his value?
Yeah, or also you think even if his performance holds, that the relative ease of making a deal at the draft when teams are in less of a salary cap bind will help you get a better deal, right? More teams will be involved, and that will help drive the price up. And yeah. I don't think that's completely outlandish. I don't think it is at all.
I do, because he's got an NMC. The teams that are interested are already informed. But there's no one coming to the party late.
The Minnesota example is maybe like that's not really Eastern United States, that's Midwest. So maybe that one, even if Minnesota was like, yeah, we really like this player, we'll talk to you at the draft though, and we're really excited. You're saying it might not matter if that's not in JT Miller's.
I mean, if you'd know one way or the other.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of ways that you can make it work for Minnesota, even with the cap crunch that they're in. You know? So I don't know. I struggle to imagine that this is one where holding helps you in any way value-wise.
I also just think you do the deal, gives you a chance to evaluate what the rest of a team looks like before the deadline, for the rest of the year, all of that going into the summer. It helps you in every way. It gives you more clarity. It helps you understand what you need. It helps you evaluate your team and kind of build your priority list in that respect. And it's just I think it's going to be more fun. And I get people will react to that, say, well, hold on, wait a second. JT Miller's my favorite player. I love watching him when he's at his best. That's not going to be fun. And that's fair. But you're not getting that right now. You're not getting it consistently. And instead, it's, as Rick Tocchet has said, as some players have said, it's affecting the team.
The team's smiles per 60 is the lowest I've ever seen it. Right? I mean, the sneering joylessness of all of this, I think, has to be weighted. Now, I think you do have some time. We're still 5-6 weeks out from the deadline. But, we're getting the text message in. Speaking of exhausting, how about you guys talk about something else? There is nothing new on this topic. Move on. I promise you, this is what Vancouver hockey fans are talking about nonstop and have been ever since the Leaf.
And it's also like, it's been the only subject. But this is kind of our point, is that it's this massive elephant in the room that you can't talk about the team without talking about. You know what I mean? Really, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to talk about, like, I don't know, you know, Danton Heinen scored a goal against Edmonton. Oh, is that good for him? Hey,
is he getting
building
on track?
Yeah, third line building. It's like, okay. Normally I like talking about that stuff, but it's just so beside the point right now with this team.
You want to do another round of Eric Brandstrom should be in this lineup tonight? We can do another round. Is Eric Brandstrom the new Nikolai Goldobin?
Yes. Okay, I made that comparison while you were away.
Did you?
Like, the whole thing is feeling very Goldobin-ish.
Well, this is why you and me, buddy.
Yeah.
This is why you and me on the same page.
We are spending a lot of time talking about a marginal NHL player.
We talked about Nikolai Goldobin, and now Dom is like so eager to have his two cents in.
Dom, I was going to say, we used to have the Sea of Granlunds. This is the Sea of Forberts.
So someone said the Sea of Julesons before in the inbox. So
same.
I like that.
In my head, it's been Sea of Julesons. Forbert, I feel like, I don't know. Forbert, we need a larger body of work before we can put him into the body of water.
Yeah. If people want us to talk about something else, you would crack out the draft lottery simulator?
Forbert is much more accomplished in his NHL career than, like, you know what I mean?
I think Forbert's been really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't mattered enough because the Canucks haven't played
but he gets unfairly lumped in with the rest of the underwhelming pieces. I'll tell you that.
His neutral zone defending is legit incredible. Like, it's hard to notice because his puck moving's not, like, he doesn't handle pressure quite as well as Ian Cole, and that's what the Canucks need more than anything else. I mean, as a puck mover, but his neutral zone defending, elite. So, so good at it. I'm buying Forbert stock. Anyway, to recap this, the Canucks, for whatever reason, repeatedly over the past 10 years have dithered on Luongo, Kessler, Boudreau, firing Jim Benning. Arguably, it wasn't just in season, Jamie. It was like multiple years. And then now on this Miller thing, we could get there. I don't think we're there yet, but I think we'll be there by the deadline. Certainly if they hold him beyond the deadline, it becomes another chapter in sort of the waiting for Luan Godot that this franchise enters.
I think even if it goes to the deadline, right? That's still, 6 weeks away? If it goes to the deadline, it goes through the Four Nations break and all of that. That's going to be almost.
So maybe it's.
That's going to be almost 2 months from the Rangers trade breaking.
So maybe it's if you come back from the Four Nations with him, maybe at that point.
Then I think we're into another example of the long pause, the long Twilight Zone waiting room sensation.
It just does feel like we know where this is going now. And so at some point, there is value in ripping the Band-Aid off and moving forward and exhaling, especially given that it's a distraction as the team itself is now admitting.
Yeah, and on that point, I mean, that'll be another interesting look. Buffalo, they played last night, and, you know, the Canucks are heavy favorites on the money line tonight, and that's fair enough. But I think every game now, you're kind of in this. The number one question is, where's the team's headspace at? Where are they mentally in terms of their ability to prepare for the game, their ability to shut out the noise that they're starting to talk about? And, you know, we always see sometimes there's a galvanizing thing, and Tocchet spoke earlier, or actually yesterday, about, hey, if the whole team is together, you can actually kind of rally around the fact that there's this noise creeping in, right? You can use that to galvanize you if the team is united. But I think that is really the biggest question game to game for this team. Is it going to be the starts that we saw in Winnipeg and against LA, or is it going to be the type of efforts, even if they're not beautiful games or anything, or high ceiling games from the Canucks, at least the type of effort and commitment we saw against Toronto and we saw against Edmonton? And who knows? It's kind of like flipping a coin, it feels like, at this point, getting ready for a Vancouver Canucks game as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. You can send your thoughts in. We'll get to them maybe later on in the show. Up next, we'll talk to Sabres reporter Paul Hamilton from WGR Radio, get his read on another disappointing Sabres season, where they go from here. And then a little later on in the show, we'll hear from Rick Tocchet, who spoke after the team's morning skate today as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right, the Canucks playing the Buffalo Sabres tonight at Rogers Arena. Now joining us to chat a little bit about the Sabres, tonight's opponent for the Canucks, from WGR Radio in Buffalo, he is Paul Hamilton. Paul, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
We're doing very well. It's a very busy, interesting times here around the Vancouver Canucks. And every game is, as I was saying earlier, feels like a little bit of a coin flip as to which Canucks team we're going to see. We'll see what we get against Buffalo tonight. And, you know, from the Sabres perspective, another disappointing season, last place in the Eastern Conference right now. You're probably tired of getting this question, but I mean, what's gone wrong for the Buffalo Sabres this season?
Well, they're doing the same thing basically for Lindy Ruff that they did for Don Granato last year, and it's a totally different way to play. And just like last year, when they played the way Don Granato asked them to play, they normally were pretty good. They can be a good team. They do have good players, but they didn't do it near enough, and you saw what the results were. So in comes Lindy Ruff, talks about things that are non-negotiable as far as this team is going to be better defensively. And that's non-negotiable. It actually is negotiable because they don't do what he asks them to do on a regular basis. When they win, that's the times they've done it, but they don't win very often, and they don't do it very often. So you can't bench the whole team. You can't trade the whole team. But it's been proven when they play the way Lindy Ruff wants them to play, defending well, getting up ice quickly in transition. And they're a darn good hockey team. But we, you know, they did have one little streak this year where they were 1-7-9, but then they promptly lost three in a row after that. And that's what they do. It's, you know, do you realize it's been 2 years almost to the day since they've had a four-game winning streak? They have 4 3-game winning streaks this year, but they have not been able to put together. Every team in the NHL puts together 4-game winning streaks every year, and even more than 4 games, except the Buffalo Sabres. And it's probably – now, this group's been together a little over 2 years, I would say 2.5 years as a group. The young players, you know, in a couple of players in and out, but the basic core group. And I've been in this business for 43 years, and I have never seen a team mentally soft as this group. I mean, one thing goes wrong, and it's mass panic. And if people don't know, they played the Colorado Avalanche in Buffalo, had a 4-0 lead at the 11-minute mark of the first period, chased the goaltender, and lost the game. In regulation, they lost the game 5-4. So they go to Colorado. They have a 3-0 lead against Colorado. They lost that game in overtime. Because it was 5-3 Sabres as Colorado pulled their goalie with about 3.5 minutes left. They scored almost immediately, and then the mass panic sets in. And then they score again with 7 seconds left, and then they score again in overtime. And it's their best players that let them down. Whereas Colorado's best players showed up. They have 3 superstars. They all showed up, all 3 of them. Buffalo's best players, Rasmus Dahlin, on the game tying goal, he decided, you have Nate MacKinnon, who leads the league in scoring, had 49 assists. You got him on the wall, and he starts coming out. And Rasmus Dahlin didn't fall. On his own, he went down to all 4s. Nate MacKinnon probably died laughing before he actually made the pass in front of the net to the wide-open Drouin for the tying goal. It's like, really? You're supposed to be Buffalo's best player, and you go down on all 4s to defend Nate MacKinnon? What are you doing? And, of course, it's in the net. So your second-best player, Tage Thompson, in overtime, decides to try to go through the whole Colorado team, because he doesn't realize that his team is tired and the other 2 guys changed. So now he's at the Colorado blue line trying to skate through everybody. Tabes just knocks him off the puck, takes off on a breakaway, and scores the overtime goal. They're your 2 best players. And that's what they do. I have never seen a team that panics as much as this team does as soon as something goes wrong.
Wow. One thing I love about having Buffalo Sabres folks, people who cover the team on, is I swear to God, Buffalo media are the only folks with sharper knives than we have out on Canada's West Coast. So tell us how you really feel.
I've never seen anything like it. And Lindy Ruff is just thoroughly frustrated. I've been around Lindy. I know how he reacts to things, and he's trying things that should work and have worked for him all through his coaching career with the Sabres, with the Stars, with the Devils. It doesn't work with his group. I'm not in Vancouver. I do cover most of the road games, but I didn't wind up on this trip. I was just seeing a video. They normally, on a back-to-back game, will not morning skate.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a morning skate. It was a practice.
Yeah.
I was watching, them in around the front of the net, and because they normally aren't around the net, and that really aggravated him yesterday. Plus, they didn't battle at all. Seattle won every battle. Buffalo scored to take a 1-0 lead, and it took 27 seconds for 3 Sabres to lose a battle behind the net to a guy who belongs in the AHL and John Hayden, and John Hayden scores, and it winds up in the net. He had the lead for 27 seconds, and 3 guys couldn't win a battle, and it's in your net. And Lindy Ruff was furious, so they had a little bit more than a morning skate today down in Vancouver.
We've got a lot of in the inbox. This guy sounds like he is a Canucks reporter. All the same issues trying to close out games. It seems like there is a spiritual connection between Vancouver and Buffalo. Do you guys think about it in Buffalo as much as we think about it in Vancouver?
Probably not, but of course we came in the league the same year.
Yep.
And, you know, it was a 50-50 chance who was going to get Gilbert Perreault. The Buffalo Sabres wound up with them, with him, and I'm sure the Vancouver Canucks would have loved to have him. But, yeah, so, but you don't hear that as much. I mean, around here, since you're only less than 2 hours from Toronto, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs that get talked about all the time. And it's only Buffalo's way. Buffalo fans don't realize that Toronto Maple Leaf fans couldn't care less about the Buffalo Sabres. Never have. I mean, they care about the Montreal Canadiens, the Ottawa Senators, and the Detroit Red Wings. That's their rivals. It's not. But here in Buffalo, I mean, they just despise the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Toronto Maple Leafs take over the building here every time they come because Sabre fans, you know, you get premium prices for those tickets. They can pay for half their season tickets just by selling a Toronto game or two. So this turns into a Leaf crowd here. Now, if the Sabres were a better team and, you know, fighting for playoffs and the Stanley Cup and everything, I don't think it would be that bad and people wouldn't want to sell their tickets. But it's the worst team in the Eastern Conference. They're like, why should we go to the game? We can sell these games and basically go for free for half the other games by doing that. So it's definitely the Toronto Maple Leafs that get talked about here.
Why is it that the Buffalo Sabres playoff drought, which pretty much entirely coincides with the Pegula era of ownership of the team, like why can the Pegulas not get out of their own way when it comes to the Sabres and then the Bills are a model franchise?
It was this way with the Buffalo Bills, too. The Buffalo Bills were out of the playoffs for 17 years.
Mm.
Now, that wasn't all under Terry Pegula.
Yeah.
But he finally, after some really bad hires, Terry Pegula doesn't know how to hire people. And he absolutely lucked out with Sean McDermott. He hired a defensive coordinator, gave him the keys to the castle. It's like, well, wow, really? I mean, he has complete control. I mean, he doesn't report to Brandon Bean, the general manager. They knew each other from Carolina, and he basically brought Bean in here. But they both report to Terry Pegula. And most head coaches in the NFL don't make up the roster. He does. Now, he and Bean are on the same page, basically. So it's really not a problem. But he came in, and he was able to change the culture, change everything around here. And basically, he hit. And he hasn't been able to hit on the hockey side at all. But we talked about when the Buffalo Sabres and the Vancouver Canucks came into the league. In the history of the Buffalo Sabres, they have only hired two general managers who had NHL general manager experience. And they go, one was the very first general manager, Punch Imlach, who had experience as GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs. The other was Scotty Bowman, who was the GM of the St. Louis Blues when they came into the league in 67. That's it. That's the only two GMs in Sabre history that have any experience when they get the job as a GM in the league. That's a problem. And it's a problem here with Kevin Adams. His inexperience has shown, and it's a huge problem. And I don't see it even, you know, I don't understand after 5 years how Kevin Adams is still making trades and running this club, but he is. I mean, you've had 5 years, almost 5 years in June, and you are the last place team in the Eastern Conference. How do you still have a job?
Well,
I
sorry, Paul, to cut you off there, but and now it's he's the guy who got you into this mess now feels like he's going to be tasked with getting them out of it because, as you said, you know, you just hired Lindy Ruff. You're probably not going to fire him. So you start to look at big player personnel changes. But the thing that stands out now is so many of the players on Buffalo are signed to massive long-term deals, right? Thompson, Cousins, Dahlin, Power, Samuelson, et cetera. So it becomes a very tricky situation, even if you want to do a big shakeup of the team. And as you said, the core has really struggled to kind of mature and, you know, there's issues with with fragility and all of that. So I'm sure there's an appetite to do something big in Buffalo, but I mean, what are the next steps? Like, how do you even go about starting to shake this up given the contractual situation?
Well, the team needed a top six forward for the last 2 years, and all Kevin Adams does, well, we've got the guys. We can score goals. There's no, you know, and he's throwing it all on his young guys. And I'm a firm believer, you got to spend some time in the American Hockey League. Some of these young guys have not, and most of them have not spent enough time in the American Hockey League. You know, maybe 40 games, and here they are. You know, and that's a problem. I mean, Jason Zucker, I'll be totally honest with you. I thought when that signing was made, I'm like, all right. $5 million, 32 years old, 1 year. I was like, I don't hate it. I don't love it. Okay. Wow, did he prove me wrong? He's been one of their best players. And, you know, he has really helped young Yuri Kulik. He's been on the line with him more than often than not. He's great in the locker room. He's their second leading scorer. And, you know, it just goes to show what this team needed in veterans, but they don't have enough of it. It's just too many guys who are 23 years of age or younger that are on this team that they're counting on in key situations. You know, they shouldn't be in the spots they're in yet. Yuri Kulik should not be centering their top line at age 21. I mean, but that's what they're stuck with now. You know, and I think Yuri Kulik's going to be a fine hockey player. I really do. But he's just not there yet as far as with the responsibility that he and J.J. Paterka and Jack Quinn and Dylan Cousins. And, you know, a lot of people are right. They say, well, Dylan Cousins certainly is struggling here, but you get him on another team, you might be sorry you traded him. And I don't disagree with that. It's just this group as a group combined, and it's not, they're not fighting or anything. They like each other. They're always out together. They always do things together. They, you know, they genuinely like each other, but they don't click as hockey players. And that's the problem. And, you know, we've seen what happened when Eichel's gone, what he did and what O'Reilly did when he left and what Reinhardt and Bogosian and guys who have won cups, you know, have left here and done where they couldn't get it done here. Now, Reinhardt was a good player. He was around 30 goals in Buffalo, very good hockey player. And but he goes to Florida where he's surrounded by great hockey players. And now here he comes. And now he's a 50-goal scorer. You know, so he wasn't his fault. It wasn't Eichel's fault. They both came in and played their best hockey on the ice that they could possibly play with what they had here. You know, but they go other places and they both are Stanley Cup winners. And, you know, that could happen with a Dylan Cousins or that could happen with a J.J. Paterka or these guys because the team is not built correctly. Why? Because you have an owner who wants to have scouting reports on players that they're drafting so he can go over film. Now, listen, I don't think he's saying draft this guy, but he wants to know all about him. And it's just Kevin Adams, to me, in my opinion, should be able to make a trade, say, Terry, we're making this trade. He's your GM. Let him do his job. Don't give your opinion on the trade. Say, okay, thanks for letting me know. You know, and make the trade. You know, but any GM here does not have that power. I mean, there's a guy who sits in the press box here, Rick Dudley, who I think is one of the best talent evaluators I've seen in the National Hockey League. This is a guy who has experience. He lives around here. You know, that would be the first guy I'd be calling. Would he take the job? I don't know. But that'd be the first guy I'd be calling. You know, a guy like that. You know, maybe Kevin Adams would have been more, hire Rick Dudley and have Kevin Adams, Rick Dudley's assistant. You know, that's maybe where Kevin Adams belonged, you know, as far as, but he's never run a hockey department. He's got, you know, the director of pro scouting. He's never done anything in the NHL, but he's the director of pro scouting. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. You look at it, really, Lindy Ruff is the only one in this organization and a couple of players who have any experience with what they're doing.
Paul, this is excellent, man. We appreciate it.
Like, the Pegula should consider asking Paul Bissonnette what he should do.
That's
that's what
I don't know if you saw, but that's what our owner out here is doing, apparently. All right. Paul, that was awesome. We appreciate it, man. And thanks for doing this.
No problem. Take care.
That is Paul Hamilton from WGR Radio in Buffalo, longtime Sabres reporter, and not holding back, to put it mildly. People are fired up in the inbox.
He was amazing.
People loved it.
Buffalo, the particular vintage of Buffalo sports misery
is like, so good. It's so incredible.
And it's like shady side of the vineyard, you know, 1979. Like, oh, it's so delicious.
A lot of people texting in, you got to have this guy on every time we play Buffalo. Someone else says, I feel better now after having listened to that. It is good. A good sense of perspective from around the league about, you know, there are other really tough situations as well. I always have to bring this up as well. Jeffro texted in, didn't Buffalo give their alumni fake jerseys or rings or something a few years back? I remember a Buffalo fan freaking out about that. And famously, was it Dwayne from Buffalo? Part of his rant was Danny Gare wearing a knockoff jersey at a turkey drive, which has always stuck with me because they gave Danny Gare, franchise legend from Nelson, by the way, a knockoff jersey for a turkey drive. I booked Danny Gare once for the station when I was producing for Rintoul, and I was just like so tempted. We're keeping it on not that, but I was like, oh man, I want to ask him about the knockoff jersey
at the turkey drive.
Yeah,
so brutal.
How do you put Danny Gare in a knockoff jersey at the turkey drive? Come on, absolutely outrageous. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So yeah, interesting that Buffalo, as Paul mentioned, and I think Mike Harrington, who covers the Sabres and is on the road, put the video out as well from, you know, obviously the Sabres take the ice for their morning skate time after the Canucks. But as Harrington said, as Hamilton said, they're not a typical morning skate, more of a full-fledged practice for the Buffalo Sabres at Rogers Arena. That's despite playing in Seattle last night.
Well, they didn't play in Seattle last night because it was MLK Day.
No, they played. It was in the afternoon.
Game.
Okay.
Yeah, so they would have been in Vancouver by about 7 last night. Because it was, you know, like a 1 p.m.
Fair enough.
Pacific time game. So I because there were some of my colleagues who were like, well, what's going on there? And it's like, no, that's an MLK Day game. Not that weird to do a night game. Like, if you play early, doing the morning skate's not that ridiculous.
Yeah, but amping it up? On the second half of back-to-back?
So the Canucks might have a pretty significant schedule win on their hands tonight against a Buffalo Sabres team that they actually really struggled to beat when last they faced.
Now, having said that, you never know, right? Because, yeah, the rest thing might come into play, but, like, Lindy Ruff's not doing it to hurt his team's chances tonight, right?
No.
He's doing it because he thinks he needs to send a message. So will that message get through? Who knows? But it's at least an interesting wrinkle to watch, right? Does it give him a little, a bit of a kick in the pants there before the game against the Canucks?
And the other part of this is, you know, I do think this Canucks team is sort of hilariously one of those teams now where if you think it's going to be good, it's going to be bad. And if you think it's going to be bad, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything stacked in their favor tonight. This feels like the game that the 2004-2005 Canucks have in particular lost regularly over the course of the past few months.
Just to follow up on some of the texts that we got in, we were talking obviously about JT Miller and that situation and whether or not it will drag on here after seemingly almost getting done over the weekend to the Rangers. And by the way, we should point out Frank Saravalli with some new intel from the Daily Faceoff on that, suggesting that maybe the Rangers were asking the Canucks to retain money on JT Miller's salary, and that's part of what led to the deal breaking down, which is very understandable from the Canucks' perspective, but I think also illustrates how tough a deal that's going to satisfy all parties here could be to make. This text comes in, I think the deal needs to get done before the Four Nations. You can't risk Miller getting hurt at that tournament, and I mean, that's a good point. And given the Canucks and, you know, Canucks luck and Canucks history and all of that, I think that's an excellent point to make, that ideally you'd like to get it done before he goes off to play for Team USA. Capitol Hill Ron texts in, gentlemen, I know they're not the same type of player, but didn't Besser and Garland ask for trades and eventually that went away? Maybe that will happen here. And again, I think there's some semantic stuff there about asking for trades versus kind of being aware that management was shopping them and being okay with that and the agents getting involved and everything. Part of the reason that went away was given where their performance was and their salaries and the flat cap, teams just weren't that interested, right? It was kind of a situation where the Canucks might have to throw in a sweetener or there'd have to be serious retention. And then, yes, they started playing a lot better. And obviously, Besser has the 40-goal situation, and that quiets the noise. We'll see what happens with Besser here. Garland, you know, Rick Tocchet loves him, so he's earned himself a bigger role. So, yeah, it can happen where, whether it's a trade request or management really shopping a player aggressively or whatever, it can happen that it goes the other way. It's different in this situation, I think, one, because of how close it seemed to be on the weekend. But even having said that, you know, the question of, well, maybe this just all goes away. That's possible. That's absolutely possible.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we compared it to, you know, the Roberto Luongo situation, and feels like there's always going to be another shoe dropping.
That's what I'm saying. It could go away.
Absolutely extend.
It could subside, but there's always going to be another Nashville game. There's always going to be another benching. There's always going to be another moment where this player in Vancouver, for whatever reason, ends up back on the trade block. So, nothing's done till it's done. I'm not saying abandon all hope, all who enter here, but this is certainly trending in an evident direction at this point for us, and it's really just a matter of waiting.
For Luongo, though.
For Luongo, though.
Yes. I don't know. I'm still kind of in I'll believe it when I see it mode, right? Where it's, like, you're right. Intellectually, I know you're 100% right that, okay, it's going in this direction, and the way plugged-in insiders are talking about it is completely different than they have been in the past when it comes to this same player. But also, given the history you outlined with the Canucks and the difficulty making the deal and all of that, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it's like, well, you know, the value just wasn't out there, and we're winning games and he's playing better, so we're going to give it another shot. It feels like it would be kind of baffling at this point to do that, but at the same time, I mean, we've seen similar things happen, I think, for the Vancouver Canucks in the past, so who knows? We'll see. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. We've got one final segment coming up, but we'll try to get some non-Miller questions in from the inbox as well in the final segment. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet too, of course, before the Canucks take on the Buffalo Sabres tonight at Rogers Arena. That's coming up next year on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Well, I'll give you credit for trying something new, Zach. I don't think this is going to be going in the rejoiner rotation. What genre would we describe this as?
It's kind of like crunchy, come on, shake your body, baby, do the conga.
You know what it reminds me of?
Yeah.
Bar scene in Star Wars Episode 1.
No.
Yep.
Like the Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
I don't even recall that. Not a big Phantom Menace head.
I'm a big Mos Eisley Cantina purist, personally. But
me too. It's my ringtone.
Do you guys know?
That's it.
I don't know.
You know what I like about the Mos Eisley Cantina? Sorry.
Okay.
The little bat creature that drinks with two hands. That guy's my guy.
Yeah. Do you guys know?
I thought it was so cute.
I don't even know if I can say it, but do you know the name of the genre of music that the Cantina band?
Jazz.
Nope. Incorrect.
It's close.
Close.
It's close.
Very close. I honestly don't think I can say it. So I would just encourage everyone, if you want to laugh, go ahead and look up what the genre is called. Because, I'd be worried about my career if I was to say that one on the air. Anyways, it is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Dom is funny, right? Yeah, it's pretty good. Anyways, we're broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at dunbarlumber.com. It is a Canucks game day. They did their game day skate down at Rogers Arena earlier today, and we heard from the head coach, Rick Tocchet. Let's hear from Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, that game's passed for me and our team. We have a big challenge tonight. We have to have a same kind of mindset against this team. A lot of dangerous guys over there.
What are the biggest positives you're pulling from that one that you want to see in tonight's matchup?
I thought we were really aggressive when we had the puck. We took the puck the net a couple of times more than I've seen attacking the interior. Just not accepting, just throwing the puck, to somebody else. We're actually moving our feet, and that's really the key to offense is, get inside the interior, then make your play. And I think we did a lot better against Edmonton.
Rick, what do you think the sustained winning streak would be for this hockey team? You haven't won back since December 1st, but obviously we know what teams are trying to do overall with everything.
I think for some guys, confidence, I think, will help some guys loosen up, relax. I think the uneven play, the inconsistency has hurt some guys' confidence. You can tell out there. So I think when you can win a couple of games, I think it'll loosen some guys up. That will really help us.
You were undecided yesterday. Is Friedman drawn tonight?
Yeah, Friedman's got to go in tonight, yes, for my
Is he going to be on a pairing with Quinn Hughes to start the game?
Well, I think right now, I told Phil yesterday that he might have a couple of different pairs of situational hockey. So he'd have to be ready to play with Huggy sometimes and also to have his own pair. So he's got to be ready for it.
Is it Thatcher in goal?
Yeah, Thatcher's going
in. And is this part of trying to get Thatcher on a bit of a run?
Yeah, all fairness to Thatcher. I mean, like I said, he's been off so long. He had the back spasm. He's played a game out in, I think... He's one of the best players in the league. He needs to run some games here. I said that to him a couple of weeks ago. So I think this is the time to get him going. It's no disrespect to Lanx. Lanx has been unbelievable for us, and he's going to get some time. But I think right now, I think it's important that we get Demmer some games.
And the schedule offers you that opportunity right now with no back-to-back.
Yeah, we just had 2 days off, so I think it's good to have Thatch go in.
Rick, Lindy's been in the game a long time.
Yeah.
Mid-December, he was beside himself because his team had lost 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Yet they've been on a bit of a run here.
Yeah.
Where they beat the Canes, they beat the Capitals. What do you expect tonight from a team that, even though it's not in playoff contention, has seemed to have turned a corner?
Yeah, I honestly, I can't speak for him. I know Lindy's a great coach, a good friend of his. I talked to him before the Buffalo game. Hopefully get to chat with him later. But... they got dangerous guys over there. I mean, Tage Thompson, their defense is mobile. It can move the puck. Deline's a great player. They have a lot of pieces there. So it's a dangerous team. That's the way I look at it.
Thoughts on the suspension to Myers?
Yeah. I think it's just unfortunate. It's a tough job. It's a tough job for the referees. It's tough for George Perros. It's all this tough. I just don't like the grandstanding. It's like, well, they protect this and this. It is what it is. I don't want Connor McDavid to get suspended. We're playing him. I mean, I'm being honest. You want to play the best. I mean, he's terrific for a league. He's an unbelievable kid from what I've been told. The way he works at his game, unreal for the game. That happened. So you deal with it. It's the same thing with Mizey. So, for me, it's a tough position for everybody. So it's really hard for everybody to sit in a couch and rip everybody. I have a tough time with that. A lot of people are grandstanding, ripping their refs. I mean, Wes McCauley is one of the best refs in the league. Okay, there was a hold. A couple holds there, yeah. Okay, didn't get called for whatever reason. It was like 10 seconds left. There's a missed high stick. Like, we can go back and forth. It's a 3-game suspension, and it is what it is. Like, we got to move on from this. That's what I think.
You've known Garley a long time. Did he ever do that in AZ where he tried to just keep a star player under a hole late in the game so he can't get to the net, maybe take a couple of winners?
I don't know. He just wants to win. Yeah. When there's 10 seconds left, and sometimes you're supposed to do that, you start grabbing, holding people because, there's nothing wrong with that strategy. He also got punched in the head too. So it's not – listen, like I said, it's not a tit for tat. It's like everybody's blowing this out of proportion. It is what it is. I mean, I'd move on from it.
Hey, Rick, we're a day after Patrick spoke to all of us yesterday. Hold down the temperature with everything that's been going on, the outside noise of him to say when this team plays the way that it should, plays 5-on-5, the way that you guys are capable of, you're a good hockey team. Do you think that's maybe quite a thing that made things a little worrisome?
I just think when guys walk through the door in Rogers Arena, just worry about your job, worry about your team identity, what you can do to help the team win. If you start thinking of other stuff, it gets dangerous for players. And I think, whether it's our fault or whoever's fault, it's kind of crept in the locker room. And then you get uneven play. So you got to be strong mentally. I've been in the league a lot of years. You got to come through those doors and just know, hey, what's my job? What do I have to do tonight to make the team successful? If everybody does that, then the numbers are big, and you group together that way.
Do you mean you just show them videos of their first period over and over again and
what they can do? Well, I think it's important, the positive video is something we always do, but, you know, we won against Toronto. I thought we played a terrific game, and that didn't help because too high, too low. I mean, you can't be a roller coaster in this league. And that's why I'm trying to forget about this Edmonton game. It's over. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. You know, we got Buffalo. It's going to be a tough game tonight. And if we don't think anything different, bad things can happen.
Are you specifically with JT? Are you having a council at all with everything that's going on? Just show up for your job?
Our relationship's always the same. He's great. He comes in or he's in a meeting. He'll ask a question about a play. He's very intuitive when it comes to, he wants to know stuff. That's the one thing that I've always loved about JT. Right or wrong, he wants to know, hey, what we should do on these plays. And I think that's something he's brought every day to the team. I'd rather have a player like that than a player just sits there and doesn't say anything.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media before they take on the Buffalo Sabres tonight at Rogers Arena. And the emphasis from Rick Tocchet, just worry about your job, what you can do to help the team win. And that's in response to questions about the noise, the dreaded noise surrounding the team right now, of course, especially in light of the JT Miller trade reports.
You know those like contraptions that have like 18 different horn instruments on them?
Yeah. I think so. There's a lot of kids' toys like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like someone standing outside being like, rawr, rawr. It's like, man, the noise is really getting to the room.
This dang noise. That rejoiner Zach played. Yeah. They're like, oh, this noise.
Come
on,
shake your body, baby. Do the conga.
This is awful.
Except it was worse than that somehow. How's it worse than that?
I don't know. What? Is that like your least favorite song or something?
It's up there, man.
Not after what I just played.
It's up there.
I think the instrument you're thinking of is the saxaboom.
The saxaboom. You know what the actual worst song of all time is?
What?
Darude Sandstorm.
That's a terrible take.
I don't mind it. I think my least favorite song of all time is Mambo Number 5.
It's another terrible take.
I hate that's a bop. I'm here
no,
for
no, I hate it. It's so annoying.
My problem with Darude is that I'm pretty confident that you could put like 1,000 babies at a 1,000 pianos, and eventually one of them would do.
Darude? Yeah, so it makes it great. It's universal.
Just like
it's the universal language.
The universal language of like just like babies. No, and it's like da 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 da. It's so bad, dude.
Mambo Number 5. Mambo Number 5. Will Smith's Miami.
Oh, wow.
Horrible.
Sorry.
Fantastic
horrible.
Song. Okay. Shut your mouth.
So
bad. I'm sorry, but I've got a Lada. I'm sorry. I've got a Prada bag with a Lada stuff in it.
You guys are both wrong.
Is one of the all-time great rap lyrics.
Awful.
You're right. It is only great because it is so bad.
Incredible. And the beat.
I've got
the
a Prada.
Beat, I use air quotes to like mockingly describe it. So bad. Awful.
Rather play ball with Shaq and all, flat and all.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you're right. Rhyming and all with and all is like pretty low.
Yeah.
Okay, you know
what? And I like other Will Smith songs. Like, I'm not above Will Smith,
I'm
but
sorry.
That is bad.
I'm going to Miami. You were right. That is absolute dreck.
Yeah. You guys not remember 2003 Romanian bop Dragostin Day?
I do not. No.
Oh, you would if you heard it. It's a banger.
Is that the one with the violin?
Na 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 na.
Yeah. I actually do know.
I
that
don't
song.
Know about that.
I like that song.
What?
Yeah, I'm okay with that song.
We're getting a lot of I'm Blue. That's a tough one.
No, I'm Blue is fine.
Yeah, it wouldn't make my top five, but
I'm
I
fine
get
with
it.
I'm
David
Blue.
David Guetta just remixed.
The
it
other one
long.
For me is
I'm good with I'm Blue.
The other one for me is LFO. Summer Girls.
Oh,
that's a tough
Canadian
listen.
Canadian classic.
That's a tough listen. Are they Canadian?
Yo, yeah.
Really?
That's a Disney Channel bop, my friend.
And I feel like that's one that Americans don't know.
No.
And this is the one that like fly
why were they
by
singing
for the
about
summer?
Abercrombie and Fitch? Wasn't that an
for
American brand?
Yeah, but we had it in Canada, didn't we?
I'm pretty sure Americans know about that. Oh man, I'm stunned now.
Boop 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 boop.
No,
boop.
LFO origin, New Bedford, Massachusetts. What are you guys talking about?
It was on Family Channel, man. That's how everyone knows it. And that's a Canadian thing.
I think you're thinking of something else.
No, man. Family Channel used to have music.
All right.
Music.
Well,
anyways,
so,
that one's up there for me.
Eiffel 65 is bad for sure, but I have time for it, especially because it had that weird PlayStation song on the album. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
On the album? You listened to the Eiffel 65 album? And you're expecting me to remember deep cuts, B-sides from Eiffel 65?
I mean, there was like four songs.
Remember track 7 on the Eiffel 65 album? Remember, no, I don't.
Okay, remember secret tracks?
Yes.
I do remember
yes,
that.
Of course.
This is how I know I'm old.
Do you guys remember Before 4, Get Down?
Yes, I remember Before
4. Of course.
Yep.
That was wild. Honestly, that was wild.
That aired on a kid's channel. That's a tough look.
What was the boy band that formed in the reality show?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Their first song was called Liquid Dreams.
That's pretty good. That's legitimately pretty good. What were they called? Like Bewitched? Or...
O-Town.
O-Town. Right.
Oh, man.
O-Town.
And they had the random like fat guy. That was so good. I like
that. You need a tenor.
Yeah.
Hold on. Somebody just texted in LFO rules. If you steal my sunshine is very good. Guys, that's Len. Maybe you guys are thinking of Len.
No.
Canadian. Somebody texts in, if you got to be getting LFO mixed up with Len. My Sunshine is a great
song. Steal My Sunshine's fantastic.
By Len, by Canadians, yes. Len. I'm talking about Summer Girls by LFO.
I know.
Horrible
Stop
song.
Stop by for the summer.
Exactly.
For
exactly.
The summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a bad song. You're right. That's a bad song. That is up there for bad songs.
So I think that's my big three.
What about Every Morning by Sugar Ray?
No, I like it. I like Every Morning.
I have no problem with Every Morning.
That's a good song.
Yeah. There's a halo hanging from my...
corner of my girlfriend's four-post bed.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a good song. What do you got against Sugar Ray?
I have no problem with that track.
Do you guys remember Canadian band? Oh, what were they called?
Hot Heat?
No, but they had that song Sucks to Be You.
I don't
know. Prozac. Oh, yeah. Remember Prozac?
Okay, of course. Sucks to Be You, I know. That was Prozac for sure. They were weird.
It's a cartoon band, right? All their music videos were cartoon.
Anyway, like we should move on.
Yeah, somebody texts in, is this Canucks talk or Much Music?
Oh, pop-up video? That's a lot what I aspire to.
A lot of Much Music happening.
This is Much Canucks talk.
All right. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text.
So the JT Miller trade that hasn't happened, let's talk about that for the 19 millionth time.
No. We're gonna...
Mark Friedman. I got Mark Friedman takes. Mark Friedman is one of the organization's
six best
contenders.
By the way, Vic also texted me to say that Dom was thinking about Len.
Right.
I think a lot of people are like, guys, you're thinking about Len.
No, I know the difference. But I'm telling you, LFO played on Family Channel.
Well, I'm sorry. Right. Well, excuse me for thinking about Len. I'm sorry that you have better things to do.
I have always liked Steal My Sunshine as a song. Anyways, all right, game tonight. Buffalo Sabres, Vancouver Canucks. What everyone's talking about.
I'm excited to watch Zach Benslin. Sorry, I can't get Len off my mind. I'm thinking about Len all the time.
Who's on your quarter century
That's way
band
better.
Team?
My quarter century band team. Wow.
It's
all wheezy.
I'm excited to watch Zach Benson, Bowen Byram.
Yeah.
Some guys with local ties here, BC boys.
Look, Mark Friedman, man, I'm serious. First of all, I think the team is going to miss Tyler Myers more than people want to admit. I think he's been playing really good hockey for about 4 or 5 weeks here. I think that's been easy to overlook given the team's overall struggles. But I actually think he's been playing well, even independent of the factor that we all have to be very careful of, which is, hey, this guy's looking great with Quinn Hughes.
Yes. Yep. Well, even because you were talking about Tyler Myers playing well over the last few weeks, and it's like a big chunk of that was with Quinn Hughes.
100%. But he's played well even independent of that factor. Because you're right, we do have to strip out the, hey, Jordy Benn looking pretty good with Quinn Hughes. You know, it's like, yeah, we know. You know, like, Ethan Bear, looking great with Quinn Hughes. So even independent of that factor, I think Myers has been a big contributor of late. I think that's been easy to overlook given the team's overall struggles, but individually I think his offensive game, his assertiveness has been welcome, and I actually think the club's going to miss him a fair bit here. But that said, I mean, Mark Friedman, you know, everything we ever say about Eric Brandstrom I think is true about Mark Friedman. He's maybe not quite as skilled or fast a skater, but I think he can move the puck more ably than most of Vancouver's other options. I also think he's pretty good defensively, and you know, we saw him have that. I don't remember who it was against, but he had that awesome game where he was playing chippy and making a difference. And honestly, he didn't follow it up with as good a game, unfortunately. And so his audition was short lived. But if he gets some run here, I still think there's a lot of utility in a player like Mark
Well,
Rubin.
I do wonder, even if just getting him into kind of the rotation, right? And this was kind of a similar thing with Erik Brännström, where, you know, it got a little out of control, the people pounding the table, right, for Erik Brännström. But as part of the rotation, to give you a different look, it's not as if, you know, we're talking about inconsistency for Mark Friedman, right? Like, hey, great game where he's really driving and helping you, you know, impacting the game, but then doesn't follow it up. Well, that's Noah Juulsen. That's Vincent Desharnais too, right? So if you're just trying to find night-to-night solutions on the bottom of your blue line, I think Mark Friedman can be part of that rotation, part of the mix to get looks here, and we'll see. I mean, I guess it's just because Noah Juulsen not quite good to go, it sounds like, yet. But, you know, Mark Friedman's put in a lot of good minutes for this team over the last couple of seasons. So it's certainly not a situation where, because you're going, instead of Noah Juulsen, you have Mark Friedman, and you look at it and think like, uh-oh, how are they going to handle this? You know what I mean? It's okay. It's Mark Friedman. He's played for them before. He's perfectly capable of playing games and giving them some decent minutes, at least as a temporary option. Another interesting one for tonight's game, Thatcher Demko getting his third straight start for the Vancouver Canucks. And of course, coming off a win against the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday. But, you know, Patrick Alvin said pretty directly yesterday he'd like to see a lot more of Thatcher Demko down the stretch, and that's certainly no shot at Kevin Lankinen. And Rick Tocchet said Kevin Lankinen has been great for us. He's going to get games. But obviously there is a whole organizational desire to get Demko some run, see what you've got, see if he can stay healthy, see if he can get back up to the level or close to the level we've seen from Thatcher Demko before. And I think we should expect to see, as Patrick Alvin noted, a lot more Thatcher Demko here for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they need Thatcher Demko to show them a lot here, right? Demko becomes extension eligible beyond this season, like on July 1st. So the club faces a decision here. Additionally, Lankinen's an unrestricted free agent. The club is open to those contract talks. I think there's a feeling internally, frankly, that Lankinen has carried this team. And so you need to see, like, A, for our upside case, you know, as a playoff team, can we get Demko back to being the world beater that we know he has been pre-injury?
Mm-hmm.
B, can he hold up long enough that when we think about what it looks like if we go on a playoff run, either this year or down the line, can he start every second night for 2.5 months without us having to worry about it? Which I think is an open question, an important one. So giving him that run, seeing how, you know, what level he's at, is about as high stakes as it gets for player and organization, right? Like, if Demko's a guy who going forward teams are going to look at as a 1B or a 1A even, right?
Yeah.
A 40 game a season guy who, you know, has all the skill in the world, that's one thing. That's a $4.5 million player, maybe a little bit more once the new cap kicks in. If he's a 1A Vezina caliber goaltender, the way we've seen him perform, who's going to hold up and give you 60 games a year, then that's a $9 million player. I mean, that's like raw dollars and cents. This is as high stakes as it gets for the player. And for the Canucks, in sort of adjudicating their appetite for risk or appetite to engage in extension talks beyond the season, yeah, you got to have as much information as you can get. You know, I also think, in terms of negotiating with Lankinen, right, maybe it makes sense to fix a deal now before Lankinen, you know, like, this is also a fascinating dynamic where it's like, okay, the team intends to ride Demko now. They've made that clear. They should make that clear. So what does that do to Lankinen's leverage, right?
Yeah.
Like, what, lacking those additional games down the stretch, being sort of more in a traditional backup role, I mean, there's a lot of money at play for him too, especially given that he didn't sign until free agency. That said, you know, if Demko hits another snag health-wise, well, then his leverage amps up significantly. So it makes sense that Lankinen's camp would be in wait-and-see mode, which they are for a variety mm-hmm. of reasons related to the cap, but I also think for a variety of reasons related to just the uncertain dynamics that the Canucks are working through in the blue paint.
Yeah, waiting to see how it goes with Thatcher Demko. Because
yep.
you're right, it changes the Canucks outlook a lot, depending on what happens with
Lankinen's
Thatcher Demko.
And Demko's, yeah. and on and on. I mean,
and the rest of the league's outlook on Demko.
Well, and then factor in the uncertainty with the overall team direction, right? And the possibility that the Canucks could enter a more transitional phase here in the next month or two. And does that change, too, what you're sort of thinking about in terms of how you approach this coming up?
Real quick here, just before we go to break, we had this text in earlier, and my commitment to get some non-Miller talking points in here. Mac in North Van texts in, will Ratu get another chance with the NHL this year? He's producing in the AHL, was recently named the player of the week in the AHL, had, I think, like 6 or 7 points in his last 2 games, something like that. So he's up to 20 points in 21 games. And Talkit, I think yesterday, asked about it, you know, the possibility of Lekker Mäki coming back up, but referenced Ratu's recent production, winning player of the week in the AHL, referenced Linus Karlsson producing. You know, Abbotsford as a whole has won 6 in a row and said that he really liked that some guys are pushing and, you know, competing for a spot with the big club. So I would expect very much to see Atu Ratu back up at some point. I think we'll see more Lekker Mäki. I think we'll see more Atu Ratu. There's some other guys. You know, he mentioned Linus Karlsson, who maybe could get a look, but they've been pretty active and pretty flexible about calling different players up at different points, and I would expect that to continue for the rest of the season here for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. Sorry, I was reading the inbox. I'm 65. This is the worst the show has ever been. New low. A text message sent in when we were discussing the music in the first half. And I'm sorry. I wish I'd followed you, but I was just so excited to get worst show ever.
I do want to end on on this text about that discussion. This text comes in unsigned. I was so into the I'm Blue song that I asked my former stepdad to buy me that album for my birthday when I was 10. He was supportive, but that was when he lost confidence in the youth. He was like, if this is really what you're into, I'll buy it for you. But the disdain was palpable. I like that very much. That's about what it deserves if you're buying the I'm Blue song, or the I'm Blue album, I should say. All right, quickly before we go here, got to tell you about Denny's. True North taste awaits with Denny's 100% Canadian beef burgers made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between. JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. It's a crossover Wednesday tomorrow on the show. Looking forward to it here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.